Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with our producer, Katie Galley. How you doing, Katie?
Doing great. How are you doing, Lee?
Did you have a good weekend?
I did. It was a fun weekend. My sister graduated college.
Congratulations to her.
Well, thanks.
All right. Well, we got a big show today. Got Doug Field and Al Otto in the studio today with Verify Analytics. Welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And then we got Steph O'Connor and Tim O'Connor from Dang Chicks. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to kick off the show with Al. Al, why don't you share a little bit about Verify Analytics? What are you guys doing for folks?
So this is a fintech company that is really focused on bringing prosperity to the entire U.S. retirement system.
It's a noble pursuit.
That's the goal. That's what we're trying to do, trying to make that happen. There's a lot of misinformation, and we're bringing transparency and accountability where it didn't exist before.
Now, you mentioned fintech. Do you mind defining some terms here? What is fintech?
That would be financial technology.
Mm-hmm. And then Atlanta is pretty big in that, right?
It is. It's especially in the payments area. There's a bunch of payments-oriented fintech companies, none really doing what we do, which is more focused on business intelligence for the retirement plan industry.
Now, the retirement plan industry, what does that mean?
Well, employers have retirement plans. People, they might be a 401k plan, or if you're with a governmental entity, it might be a 403b plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they have become the de facto retirement tool for most people in the United States. Not many pension plans left.
So pension or Social Security?
Social Security hopefully will continue.
Hopefully.
It's there today. So hopefully that will continue. Yes.
So right now, individuals are kind of on their own?
Well, they are. They have to manage their 401k plan, and there are certainly tools in the marketplace to help them.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how good are those tools? And that's basically what we measure. What's the performance of your actual retirement plan, not the funds in there, but the plan itself? How did it do? And how did if you have a consultant or an investment advisor, what's their skill?
But your analytics is for the business's plan or for the individual to vet the plans?
Yeah, it's business to business. Okay. So these organizations that have retirement plans, they generally have a committee, and that committee is our client. And so what people don't necessarily understand is if you're on one of those committees,
right,
you have personal liability. It's called fiduciary liability.
Right.
And there's no corporate veil to protect you from lawsuits and such.
So you have to do things to protect yourself. And this is kind of a way to protect yourself.
It is. It is. There's a legal requirement that you can't make a payment from one of these plans unless it's reasonable. But there's no definition of reasonable. Right? No definition. And so we have built that. We are measuring reasonableness for retirement plans.
And then so you created your own kind of a Verify reasonableness score?
It's called a Verify ratio.
ratio.
Okay. Yeah. If the ratio is positive, you have had value added. If it's negative, you haven't. And it's not just me. My partner, Mark McCoy, really came up with the idea. It came out of, I think, being really ticked off at losing his biggest client.
So he's like, there has to be a better way.
Got
to
be a way, because right now it's, what's your fee? Right.
And that's what they're comparing.
Right. So it's as though investment consultants and advisors are commoditized.
Right.
And so fees just keep going down, and the industry has become a commodity type.
And it's a race to the bottom.
It is.
From fees standpoint, but the level of service or the results aren't always.
Well, that's what we've found. We have found that there's a huge difference between a really well-run plan and a poorly run plan.
Like what would be a difference?
So I'll give you one of the studies that we did with, we did this with Mass Mutual because they have a tool that measures how much it costs for people to retire late. How much does it cost the company?
Uh-huh.
And it was a 1,000 employee firm, and the estimate was $34 million of cost for people retiring late. We put on top of that a good Verify ratio, Right. And that reduced cost by about $9.5 million. And the worst verify ratio that, we currently have in the database, and that increased cost by $15 million. So
that kind of spread?
$25 to $50 million.
Wow. So, and this is, the organization, they're unaware of this at all? They're just going along?
That's correct. They don't recognize that that's occurring. I'm really glad to be on the radio, really, so that more people find out about this. There's a lack of understanding about the skill of investment advisors. And so we're getting a lot of requests to evaluate my advisor or, you know, evaluate our plan. How are we doing? And those are things that we're happy to do.
So from the organization standpoint, they have someone in place, because everybody has somebody in place, right?
Most
it's
do.
Not like they don't have somebody, they're getting somebody.
There are, you know, there are groups that are direct with, for example, a Fidelity or Vanguard or somebody like that. And they think they have somebody in place, but
right.
Fidelity and Vanguard don't take that role of investment advisor. You can rely on them.
I mean, it's the individual.
Well, no, it's just nobody guiding them. It's just a committee. And
so this committee, but what are they doing, this committee?
Well, they'll review the funds
right
over time based on some level of benchmark.
So they get in a room together and they're like, yeah, how's it going? Yeah, it was up. But the market was up, so I guess we're good.
So, you know, what's happened because of all the commoditization, literally advisors and consultants spend 10 minutes of the hour or 2 hours that they have, they'll spend 10 minutes on the investments, and everything else is on how many people are participating. It's more participant coaching information, who's right. participating, how much are they putting in, that sort of thing. And the investments have just become pushed to the side.
Like it's out of their control, so they don't worry about it.
No, it's like everyone's the same, right? All investments are the same. And that's not true.
Wow. That's shocking. Were you shocked when you started kind of digging into this?
Well, I was. You know, I mean, I was experiencing it, right? My partner was bending my ear on this issue. And what he did.
Had you worked together in the past?
We were friendly competitors,
uh-huh.
right? We just got together once in a while to talk about things. And,
right.
And so he didn't recognize or he didn't know that I had the same thing just happened.
Right.
So between us, it was $1 billion in assets that was gone and a fair amount of income.
Right.
You know, so we were on our way to a conference and to there and back, we built the algorithms that we currently use. We built the structure and that was a little over a year and a half ago.
And then what was it like going to that first kind of firm and saying, hey, we got this thing here. Why don't you take a look at it?
Yeah. So, you know, the first advisor that we talked to, when we just started talking, he literally said, okay, stop. Thank you. Because now somebody can measure my skill. Because he's a really elite advisor.
Because he was good.
Really
so he
good.
Wanted to be measured.
He did.
Not everybody wants to be measured.
And he should have wanted to be
right,
measured.
Exactly. Right, exactly.
Not everybody will want to be measured because
right.
not everybody's good. But okay, so let's get some separation here on
right.
good and not so good.
Now, do you put out some sort of a document that says here's the top 10 or top 100 or you know?
We'll eventually do that. Today, it's one client at a time. We're
right.
still building that business and
so you're not benchmarking just people in general's programs.
We have a lot of that information,
right?
But we're not pushing it out to the public. The idea,
so you know.
We do.
So you can tell me off air, maybe.
There you go.
Who to avoid, who not to avoid.
Who to go pick. The key is we want this to be a community of excellence as opposed to people using our information to go get rid of, you know, go poach clients.
Right. So now when you're going out and you're having this conversation, who in the organization are you speaking with to even let them know that this exists?
So generally at the plan sponsor, the employer level, that's the chief financial officer, maybe general counsel. Those two are the ones that typically get involved.
Because you can scare the general counsel because when there's fiduciary responsibility.
Well, you know, fear is a big thing, but
right.
they get it. They understand that there's a duty and,
right.
and you know, so I worked as an expert witness on several large fiduciary breach lawsuits. And just since 2010, the settlements and judgments on those types of lawsuits
right.
It's over $1.6 billion.
So it starts getting into real money.
Yeah.
They start paying
attention. Growing. It's very similar to, you know, how asbestos lawsuits kind of took off.
Because they start snowballing.
Right, right. A lot of copycats.
Right. And so that's what you're seeing now?
Yep.
So now, how'd you get Doug kind of roped in on this?
You know, Doug actually published my first article.
Oh, really?
Back in 2001. And it was like peeling the onion on 401k fees or something like that. I was all over fees as an issue back then. And he was the only one that would publish it. Everybody else thought it was too radical. Right. And so that was pretty cool.
Doug's a bit of a renegade. Yeah.
Well, there's an understatement.
So now, Doug, so what do you like about this organization to kind of jump in like this with both feet?
Well, first of all, you know, I've spent 30 years of my time building communities around employers. So I understand the employers and employers' mindset and those stakeholders working with employers. And Al and I have known each other since 2001. I also have known Mark McCoy through, you know, the thought leadership community we built in the healthcare space. So I've known both of them. I have a lot of respect for them, you know, and what we all have to identify together, the opportunity is that employers want transparency and accountability. They demand that on the health and welfare side. And so why not on the retirement plan side?
Right.
And so the unique tool that we've developed, this analytical tool to really measure the value, you know, over time of a retirement plan, and to score the plan with a single number similar to a FICO score.
Right, so that you can compare apples to apples. It isn't like these disparate things that can't be compared. Because that's where they like to hide, right? They create kind of something slightly different, so then they can go, well, that's not us. We're good.
Yeah. So, you know, the opportunity that we have together is just really to, you know, change the game in retirement plan, you know, measurement and evaluation.
So it's some of the same, your background in the healthcare side, it's kind of similar. It's just this is kind of an uncharted area when it comes to this level of transparency.
I mean, that's exactly right. But employers want that. You know,
right.
You know, there's articles.
Well, everybody says they want it. I'll go with that.
And and actually years ago, not to date myself, when I built the employee benefit franchise, I actually published one of the leading retirement publications too. So what
full,
goes
full
around
circle,
comes
right?
around after
right,
a while.
Right.
It's after cool again. You were doing it before it was cool.
Yeah.
So now you're going out there and you said this is like a year or two old?
Year and a half, yeah.
So now what's it like? Are they just kind of jumping all over this thing or they're kind of wait and see where you're at the education stage?
You know, I think that we are changing the game. So our number one competitor in the market is status quo.
Right, to do nothing.
So getting people aware of what we're doing. When people stop and understand what we're doing, they like it. Mm-hmm. You know, they think it's cool. They like it. That mean they're buying it right away? No, but they like it. They're engaged about it. And when we look at the employer, the plan sponsors, the investment committees that Al talked about, you guys are talking about, you know, the opportunity is to really support what they're doing, whether it's the CFO, the financial analyst, or that benefit leader who is faced with a lot of the time of putting these reports together. And we make it easy for them to deliver a very intelligent, readable report on the, you know, on the retirement plan. So it's getting them to stop because they all spend part-time on a retirement plan.
Right.
It's a very important part of the business, but it's been kind of neglected from a standpoint that, hey, we put people in a defined contribution plan. You know, we are educating them on participation. We're contributing. So they turn their head to, you know, to other important issues. But as Al's talking about, not only is it a fiduciary liability, you know, responsibility, but a severe issue around retirement readiness. We have a major part of our workforce that is retiring on the job.
And what does that mean?
That means that they can't quit, they can't retire because they aren't financially ready to retire. So they're coming to work every day, but they really don't want to be there. And so as corporations are wrestling with, you know, healthcare costs, A, you've got more expense because you got people in their 60s and even early 70s that are working.
They're still around, right.
You know, they're going to have more healthcare costs. And as organizations try to optimize and elevate performance and productivity with all the programs they're doing right now, you have a workforce there that doesn't want to be there.
What percentage of the workforce do you think doesn't want to be there?
You know, I think that's still to be determined, but Al talked about the study we did, you know, with MassMutual that's highlighting, you know, tremendous corporate liability. I think there's a lot of people that want to retire. You know, I don't have that exact number. I don't think anyone does, but here's the issue. You've got more baby boomers moving into this retirement age.
Right.
So you've got the biggest, you know, percent of our workforce in retirement age or pre-retirement age. Now, there's nothing wrong with having workers in retirement age working when they want to be there, because in a lot of cases, we haven't given enough birth to skilled workers to replace them.
Right.
So if they want to be there and they're going to be productive, you know, they have a role to play, but it's the big percent that doesn't want to be there.
And then if their retirement had better returns, you're saying then they would be able to retire.
Well, yeah, here's the thing is that a lot's been done around what we call retirement plan 101, auto enrollment, education, contributions, and that's all necessary to get them there first.
Right.
But there's been studies that come out that says, okay, that accounts for 40% of the retirement plan being retirement ready. Investment performance accounts from 50 plus to 60%.
Right.
So that's so very
important. So you can't ignore that. That's right. Over half.
Right.
But that's counter to what you will read or hear about in the press.
Right, because all right. They talk about is, look, we got, you know, 85% are engaged or they're enrolled and they're doing, so we're doing our part and they think they're done, but that's only half the story there.
Right. So going back to, you know, just how we're, the traction that we are getting, I think that there's several things that are going to happen first. One is the ability to assess a plan and how well it's doing. We're seeing more people come to us to get that done.
Right.
I think if you've been sued and it's a frivolous lawsuit, and there are many of those, that we can help you defend that.
Right.
And so that's, you know, that part of the business isn't scalable, but I think that will start to build the
traction.
Well,
that's that peace of mind component, right? And you as an expert witness are probably uniquely qualified to be able to at least kind of educate them about what could happen in a courtroom.
I'm anxious to, you know, right? I'm really anxious to. I think it will be to the benefit of retirees.
So now walk me through what,
Well, I was going to say, Lee, when you look at the scope of the market, you know, we really haven't talked about that. There's over 500,000, you know, retirement plans. And
there's half a million retirement plans.
Actually, yeah. 750,000.
See, that just almost doubled there.
And we are focused on 98,000 with $10 million plus in assets, 100 employees.
So there's 98,000 that are in your sweet spot that you can help.
Correct. Yep.
That should keep you busy for a couple of days, right? So now walk me through what happens. There's 98,000 kind of in your universe of prospects. How does the first conversation occur? Like, are you sending white papers? How are you getting the word out?
Well, they're all listening to this radio station, and so they're going to call us from
right.
That,
so after that,
white papers.
So you're creating education in order to kind of explain to them what the need is, but they don't recognize there's a pain, though. It sounds like that you're kind of having to educate them that there's a problem that they don't know they have.
Well, I think that there are many like law firms and others. We're doing a webinar tomorrow with a law firm here in town, and that are educating their clients that these are issues they need to pay attention to.
Right.
We've got an article coming out in Employee Benefit News in the next week or so. We've been published in 401k Specialist online. So we're getting published out there. We're getting content.
So you're trying to get content in front of the CFOs in order to educate them about this.
Right.
The problem.
We're also continuing to connect with elite investment consultants and advisors to their clientele and also to help them get new business.
Now,
also, Lee, if I can, you know, channel partners are very important to us, and we're engaged with third-party administrators, with record keepers, with DCIOs, which are the funds, with ERISA attorneys, with CPAs, where our tool can fit in their toolkit and add value to what they're delivering.
What they're
to
already
their
delivering
clients.
Right away,
right.
And so then you kind of just work behind the scenes on their behalf, or you work in partnership with them.
At this point, generally in partnership.
Yep.
And then, so like you said, you have a webinar with attorneys. Now, how, like, walk us through what a person would hear if they listened in on that.
Well, that particular tomorrow, it's talking about peeling the onion back on fiduciary liability. Mm-hmm. And so understanding where it comes from, how you become a fiduciary, what issues can occur, how to mitigate your risk or eliminate your risk. And part of that is measuring value.
Good.
A lot of investment committee members, you know, the employers don't really understand that they are personally, you know, responsible and liable for any fiduciary breaches.
Right. I mean,
that is the fear component that Al talks about. And the emotion in this is they need to stop and say, hey, you know, how do we not only do the best job for our plan participants around a retirement plan, but how do we protect our organization and ourselves from any fiduciary breaches?
Right. And then, so that's why the relationship with the attorney groups are important.
Right.
Yeah. To let them know so they can serve their clients.
Yes.
So now, in your perfect world, how does this end? How do you help this community? Once you've got the word out and you've educated them, you want everybody just to have better returns? I mean,
well, I think that transparency and accountability will raise the bar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a perfect world, the verify ratio becomes a standard for evaluating plan performance.
Mm-hmm. So then it becomes kind of that's what's known. If you're going to evaluate a plan, it's the verify analytics plan.
Right.
And as we become the standard, that single score, that brand, that verify ratio score can be very important to an employer and their advisors on educating the plan participants, which are the employees.
Right.
Because it's a number that they will be able to understand and relate to.
And it's something that can help them in a lot of areas that they haven't even probably considered, that if they have good scores and we're consistently in the top 10 of performance, that might be can woo an employee to choose one firm over another.
It might.
So now, how can somebody learn more? What's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
I think the website. Just verify with a PH, verifyanalytics.com.
Because you guys are young and hip. That's why it's called
exactly. Yes.
It was hard to get the URL with the app.
That was actually more correct. Right there.
So that's verifyanalytics.com. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Oh, today. Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, next up, we got Steph and Tim O'Connor with Dang Chicks. Welcome.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
Did you learn anything there? How's your 401k?
Yeah, we got nothing.
We got nothing.
Yeah. You going to make some calls?
They're smart.
Well, Tim, why don't you talk a little bit about Dang Chicks? Is it a husband and wife endeavor?
It is.
It started out that way.
It started out, now it's not anymore?
He left behind, right?
Yeah, which part? The husband, wife, or the business venture? Do we need to have a talk?
It's an intervention, too.
So, no, Dank Chicks is, we started this in 2009, but it's a women's apparel and lifestyle brand.
Uh-huh. And you seem like a logical guy to be
I do.
This.
I am the back of the brand, and Steph is the front, the face. Absolutely.
So now, what does the brand encompass? What are you guys trying to communicate to the world?
Sure. So it was, Steph will tell you how it started, but we identified a gap that we saw in the marketplace with brands that really rally around and empower women in a meaningful way, not just, you know, window dressing. So we defined a Dang Chick as a woman that is beautiful, confident, worthy of pursuit, and good enough exactly how she was created. Mm-hmm. That is a Dang Chick. And if the more women that we can help to understand exactly that's who she is, then the more that we accomplish our purpose as a brand.
And then your mission, though, goes beyond apparel, that you're trying to create kind of a movement for women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it was interesting. The way we got started is I actually was in corporate America for years. And I always thought if I could start my own business, you know, helping other women feel good about themselves, you know, what would that be? And I always said I could sell anything if I like it. And so we started off with a $2,500 loan from my mom and came up with 4 t-shirt designs just to see what we could do. And so...
So who designed it?
Actually, a girlfriend from high school and Tim, my husband. He's a graphic artist as well. He's a jack of all trades. So we took the $2,500 investment and bought a booth at the Apparel Mart in Atlanta.
So you came up with these ideas.
Came up with
and
4.
Said, we're going to get a booth and see what happens.
You know, go big or go homeless. I mean, that's my motto.
Is that one of the t-shirts? Go big
or go homeless? No, but it should be.
Actually, great idea, Lee.
See that.
Circle R.
So, but it was funny.
I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I knew that I loved t-shirts and hats. I lived in them. And I thought, right, if I like them, then there's got to be a million other moms that, you know, don't like wearing makeup and dressing up all the time. And so we got a booth at the Mart, and I was completely...
But like, what made you go to the Mart instead of like a festival or like, you know, your local...
I did a trunk show at my house, but I knew that I had something kind of cool. The brand, right, people were really resonating with the brand, and they mm-hmm. found it really catchy. So I thought, how do I get in front of more people?
Right.
And so I thought, okay, well, I'll try to get these in some stores. And so we went to the first Mart in January of 2010 with four t-shirts hanging on a little garment rack. We were
So that was it. That's the booth.
Some burlap mm-hmm. on a card table with a cheesy banner. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there
And
going,
just you two or?
No, it was just me.
Just you, because Tim, what, you're busy?
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, I don't have the legs for it.
And I remember standing there looking at all my competitors, and some of them were
And like,
just,
those are like big brands. Like, this is a real deal here.
Right.
The one across from me was on Oprah literally 2 weeks before on right. Oprah's favorite thing. So I thought, I'm doomed. I'm doomed. I just wasted $2,500 of my mom's money I have to pay back. And
but you got a lot of t-shirts though, you figured.
Yeah.
The worst case scenario.
Yeah, exactly.
And we signed up 30 stores that first show.
30.
And so I took the profits and went to the next show.
So what does signed up mean? What does that mean?
They bought our line.
So they said, I'm going to buy 100, or I promise I'll buy, or they write you checks right there on the spot?
They placed an order right there on the spot.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of launched the whole...
And you're like, wow, we might have something here.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. And it just grew, and it turned into, we had showrooms in every... we had Dallas, Chicago, Vegas, Atlanta. We were traveling a lot, and by the end of...
So then you were going to other apparel marts and doing the same exact drill.
Mm-hmm.
Setting up, but we went from four t-shirts on a string,
right. Yeah,
to fairly elaborate setups, 10 by 10, 10
by 10. But you're learning this because you weren't in this business. You were just making this up as you go, right?
Yeah, well, I lost the handbook for all that, right, like early on.
Right, the manual
so we had
did
to
not
make
show
it
up.
Yeah.
So you just started figuring stuff out?
Yeah. It was learn as you go, and we were on that train, and we weren't stopping. In 2013, we had sold into over 3,000 stores nationwide.
Wow, that is amazing.
Australia, and Germany. It was a pretty big operation for a small startup company.
Sure.
We moved into a warehouse, and we had probably 8 to 10 stay-at-home moms help us with shipping and customer service.
But you were building kind of a tribe here, right? You were mm-hmm. building super fans that some people just wanted everything you put out, and some people want to get involved, and they want to socialize what you're doing on blogs and things like that, right?
Yes. And I tell you, the celebrity thing helped a lot. We had Miranda Lambert was one of our first celebrities that were...
Was that just a random thing, or you had a connection to her? How'd that come about?
It's funny. Her stylist and I connected, and she said, send me some shirts. And so I sent a dang texting because I knew Miranda was on... She was from Texas.
Right.
And literally a week later, I get an email with all these pictures of Miranda at the Grammy rehearsals with her dang Texan shirt on. And I was like, wow.
How exciting. You get goosebumps. That was
really cool. Mm-hmm. And then that same year, we had somebody call me and say, hey, turn on the TV. Elizabeth Hasselbeck is on The View wearing her dang Proud shirt. Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, all in within that 1 year, we had a lot of celebrities start to pick up the line. And Sarah Blakely just wore her dang Proud shirt last July, and she placed an order with us. So that's fun.
It's, wow. Yeah,
that helps.
Founder of Spanx.
Right. Mm-hmm. Spanx person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so it was growing. But one of the things that was hard was cash flow. You know, when we started the company in 2009, that was when the whole housing market crashed.
Right.
We didn't know any better. Like we didn't know the economy was tanked.
Yeah, they don't ring a bell when that happens.
No, but we just kind of kept going. And but the thing is, banks weren't loaning money, and so we decided we need to change some things. I was traveling a lot away from home. Money was, you know, cash flow was an issue, and so Tim went to go pursue his dream, and we changed our focus to not go to stores, but actually, how do we get in front of people and go direct so we can increase our profit margins? So we ended up tackling...
Going to individuals?
Country music festivals.
Oh, so you specialize in country music?
Yes. And so we go to large festivals all over the Southeast. We'll get in front of 50,000 people in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we're selling direct. So it's just really...
So you identified who kind of the sweet spot was for the people who like this, and then you just went all in mm-hmm. once again. Mm-hmm. Go big or go homeless.
Exactly.
Kept doubling down on what was working.
It is. It's a lot of fun. And I have a partner, Kara, that helps me travel and helps ship orders. It's a very manageable operation now. And it's actually allowing me to do some fun entrepreneurial things with Tim on his stuff. So we're just having a ball.
So now when you're doing this kind of thing and you're, how do you engage the community to kind of have to elevate it beyond just the clothing?
Oh gosh. Well, we've expanded. We started with t-shirts, but we have everything from hats to artwork to jewelry to wine to, I mean, we use the brand.
We have wine.
We have a Dang Chick Wine Club because all of us moms like to drink wine.
So you make wine or you put your license?
No, we've partnered with a company. Yes. Yeah. We're trying to get our own Dang Chick wine label. We've been trying for the last few years and we've come this close a few times. But ideally, you know, I think the brand is so unique and fun. And like I said, people really resonate with it. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, it'd be really fun to license out, you know, the brand and all different things and pet supplies. And
yeah, we've proven the concept in mm-hmm. apparel. Jeans,
right?
You know, and artwork and all the different categories that Steph managed. We've proven that concept on our own dime. Mm-hmm. And the portfolio, the IP portfolio is able to scale, able to license out. So
you're looking to license to other areas right now? Is like, what's your growth strategy? Just keep doing what you're doing for
a while?
Well,
the festivals are so much fun. And where else can you get in front of 50,000 people in a weekend? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that, and that's easy. So we'll keep doing those. We do anywhere from 6 to 10 a year. We have our online store and we're really trying to build our social media. We've got 26,000 fans on Facebook and now we're tackling Instagram right now and just trying to get that message out that, you know, if you're a Dang Chick, just...
This is where we hang out.
Absolutely.
Right?
The, you know, we talk about the celebrity piece of it, which is really cool and that helps get our message out. But what's more important is raising awareness. We have a son with high functioning autism. And we, you know, did an autism shirt that helped raise money for Autism Speaks. We did a breast cancer shirt. And so
you partner with nonprofits then kind of leverage the brand through that and help them raise money.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Kingdom Kids with Lily's Run. Mm-hmm. If you remember, that's a local Atlanta organization. So yeah, the opportunity to give back and to really make it about our core customer.
Right.
Not about us or the mechanics of how we get there or how we fund this or how we set that up. It's about our core audience.
Now, this woman that's the kind of the persona you have in your head, do you have any stories maybe they wrote you or they how inspired they were from wearing the shirt or how it means something to them?
Yes. I had a husband call me back in 2011 or 12. I can't remember. And he was upset and he was, his wife was in the hospital in Birmingham and she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Right.
And he said, me and my daughter went to a boutique and found your Dang Aware shirt for breast cancer, but you didn't have my wife's size. She's in the hospital. I really would love to try to get her a shirt because, you know, my daughter and her just loved it. And so I sent it to her and not really knowing, you know, I never heard anything.
Right.
I think it was maybe 6 months later, I get a card in the mail from the woman.
Wow.
And she was in remission. And she wrote me the sweetest card saying how much that meant to her and how that's helped her. And there was a picture of her thriving with her shirt on. And I got to tell you, I mean, that out of everything stuck with me. And that is what kept me motivated because I'll tell you, being an entrepreneur is brutal.
It's hard.
There's highs and there's lows and it's emotional and you know, you need those little wins to keep you going.
Right. The mouse has to get the cheese, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we remind each other of those moments all the time because it gets tough. And
but to see the impact you're having on lives that you didn't, you know, you had no awareness of. And who knows how many other stories are out there that are similar that you're not even aware of.
Oh, yeah. And I tell you, men love the brand. We'll go to a festival and it's the men that drag their wives into the booth.
To go and to buy it, check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So because they see it in the wife more than the wife sees it, you think?
Well, they're like, where's my Dang Dude shirt? You know, and I'm like, you're next.
They have to pop in and just roll out a t-shirt design idea.
Right. They're always helping.
Everybody's a designer. Everybody.
So now you're going to continue on with the festivals.
Yeah.
You're going to continue to build out the brand online.
Yes. And we also, we have a studio in Peachtree City. And what we've started doing is inviting women to come for a personal shopping experience. And so they'll make an appointment, come to the studio, and I'll gear them up and all the dang stuff I can throw at them. And it's just fun. And we bond. And, you know, it's just one of those really cool things.
Hmm. Now, do you offer kind of ambassador programs where you have super fans that are really hardcore and that they can go into their local market to serve them?
We have. We've thought about that.
We have thought about it. We've, you know, to identify those women, I don't think is that difficult. To really equip them for success in a local area,
right,
is, you know, it's another step. But, you know, they're definitely out there. You know, Dang Chicks was the brand that almost wasn't. And there's a little bit of a story behind that. When we first started, you know, Steph said, okay, well, I think I want to open a retail store. And mm-hmm. I said, great. What are you going to call it? And she goes, Stephanie's Boutique. I said, that's stupid. You need a brand, blah, 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 blah. Here's Mr. Brand Guy, right? So I go off and I do all my research. I come back and I present to her Dang Chicks. I said, Dang Chicks, that's it.
So you came up with one idea?
It was my one idea.
So let me know. It was at midnight on like a Tuesday night. I'm dead asleep. And he busts down the master bedroom door. I got it.
Yeah.
Dang Chicks.
It's like Thomas Edison with the light bulb.
Yeah.
Right?
And I sat up and I go, that's so stupid. And I went back to sleep. Well, he didn't come to bed that night. He was so offended and upset because obviously.
No, he figured it out.
Yeah. So I kind of crawled down, did the walk of shame downstairs, and he's laying on the couch. I said, I'm really sorry, honey. I just didn't understand Dang Chicks. He's like, Steph, when you walk into a room with all your friends and you're wearing your t-shirts and cute hats, what do you want them to say to you? Dang Chick, you look good.
And so that's resonated with our core audience.
Right.
So what we decided to do is instead of, you know, just throw a bunch of marketing stuff at people, we just really spoke with that core audience in mind.
Right.
And every pixel that's on our websites and every word that's in our marketing brochures, every point of design that we have, we run it through that filter.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a Dang Chick? Is this right. What she thinks about? Is,
yeah. Would she like this? Does this resonate with her? Yeah.
So I will say our number one design, hands down, has been our Dang Blessed. We've sold, thousands and thousands of that shirt. But now we're at the country music festivals. Our number one is Dang Drunk. So we have
to
have to cater to our audience wherever right. we go. So
yeah, your first guests on the show were like, what did we get into?
Right. So now, if somebody wants more information, what's the best way to kind of find you guys online?
Actually, it's www.dangchicks.com. And then we have a Facebook page, Dang Chicks. And then our Instagram handle is Dang Chicks.
And Twitter as Dang Chicks.
Yep.
And at any country music festival, just look for the big line of people
yep.
buying shirts.
Absolutely. We're in a big pink gypsy tent. Our next one's going to be in March down in Kissimmee, Florida. And it's the Runway Music Festival. And I think Florida Georgia Line and a couple big guys are going to be down there. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So. Good stuff. Well, best of luck. And thank you both for being part of the show today.
Thanks,
thank
Lee.
Thank you, Lee.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.